Well, the Summit County Council meeting Wednesday at the Sheldon Richens Building. Work session starts at 12:15 in the studio with a preview. Summit County Manager Tom Fisher, good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Wow, that could be a long one, huh?
We're going to end before 6 so that we can honor Valentine's Day. But yes, we've got a long one, especially with interviews for Snyderville Basin Rec and for the Planning Commission on the Snyderville side.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about the Basin Planning Commission appointments. The two positions are now held by Ryan Dickey, who is reapplying, and then Chuck Klingenstein, who is basically term limited out. Another candidate is Colin DeFord, who served on the Planning Commission, and I think he termed out?
He did not term out. He came off early because he had some business commitments that I believe that's the reason why he came off. We filled that spot, and he's reapplied, so he must have a change in what's happening at home.
Okay. So he can?
He can reapply. That's correct.
Right. Does then he then get 2 more terms?
You know, I don't know the answer to that one. I'll have to look that up in the ordinance. My guess is that his clock starts to tick again, so...
All right. Also, a legislative update. Now, do we have a paid lobbyist?
We do have a paid lobbyist, the same lobbyist that the Chamber Bureau has, Des Barker. And he has been very helpful in the last few years, especially in the areas of kind of getting us an idea of what things during the legislature, especially after budget updates are done about midway through the session. There seems to be a lot more activity and late bills that come in at that point, and he can give us a lot of good heads up on that and get us prepared pretty quickly in case we need to talk to our legislators about it.
All right. Council will be getting an update. Basically, I think on the bills that were discussed last week, for instance, that bill to increase the state transit room tax up to, what, 3%?
Yeah, that's what we're seeing right now. We still look to oppose that. While we were at UAC last week, we got a briefing on that and saw as well as from the Chamber Bureau locally, about what that would do in comparison to other resort communities in other states. It would put us at quite a bit of a disadvantage. We'd be much higher in taxes at that point.
Yeah, almost double, I think, from like Jackson Hole.
Yeah, double from Jackson Hole and maybe 3% more than Vail or Breckenridge, places like that. So it's one that we're looking at very closely.
And then there's a bill from Mike Knoll that could hamper the Central Wasatch Commission. Can you tell me what's happening with that?
Well, it's moving through. It has opposition from both a lot of opposition from local governments, both the League of Cities and Towns and the Utah Association of Counties. But the Utah Association of Counties has tried to work with the legislature to get some changes made to that. But it still has some troubling things in it and limits us quite a bit in the way that we would have to work with or ask the legislature still in order to be able to talk to folks about any kind of federal designations. And that limits our local governments and our local government leaders.
Anything else that you wanted to mention in terms of that update?
Well, we're following House Bill 175. It's an oversight committee creation pretty closely. And this seems to be coming out of I've heard it described as legislation that's seeking a problem, kind of. But, some of the trouble that some entities that are publicly funded have had over the last couple of years with whether they're charging things to credit cards incorrectly or other audit type troubles. It seems to be growing out of that motivation, but we do have a state auditor as well, so I'm not sure exactly where this one's going to end up.
Okay. let's see. At 325, a discussion regarding the 2020 census, just a couple of years away. We've got this organization, LUCA. Tell us where we are in
that
process.
So what this is LUCA is kind of a process that the Census Bureau puts out with counties, with local governments, in order to get their address list updated and correct, or as correct as possible, before they attempt to send out the surveys related to the census. So as a local government and as a kind of a regional organizer of that, we're going to put together a group that, you know, we've got our assessor's office, we've got our treasurer's office, we've got GIS experts that can help put together that list, help the Census Bureau. So this is just an update to the council on this, and also to inform our other local government partners, Park City, Camas, Oakley, Francis, Colville, Hennifer, that we can help them get their lists up to date.
Yeah, it feels like we're still using 20th century technology for the 21st century when it comes to census collection.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things that's kind of tough, because not everybody has electronic access yet, or is comfortable with electronic access. So just as we see in local government that we have to project ourselves in many different ways in order to get good information back from our citizens, I think the Census Bureau faces the same thing, and this is probably still the best or most accurate method to survey.
Okay. There's a deal for the North Summit Recreation District to acquire property from Colville for a park. Why is the council involved in this?
The council is involved because the council is the governing body for the North Summit Special Recreation District, similar to the Snyderville Basin Recreation District or the Park City Fire District. So anything that has to do with land, the council needs to be involved in. So this will be an agreement that overall Colville is going to give some land to the North Summit Rec District to program and to build some facilities on. The idea was that Colville was going to agree to the operations and maintenance of that property. So that's what this agreement accomplishes.
All right. And there's also a resolution for Mountain Regional to acquire community water. This was on an agenda earlier?
It was, as a work session item, just to get some background information on it. This is the first step in a multi-step process of annexation. And the council will hear a lot more about this over the next couple of months as the process proceeds. This just kicks it off. And so now the due diligence period begins.
All right. Is this just to acquire the water rights?
It's to operate the system and be the owner of the system, essentially. And so it has some large things to be considered in that, is that the system itself has some age problems with it. They've worked out the financials around how the current users would support bonds or some type of financing in order to improve the system and bring it up to standard, as well as operate and maintain that in the future, so that other water users within the Mountain Regional System would not be the bearers of that cost.
Okay. And then there is also a hearing on three appeals for the approval of Woodward Gargoza. The appeals are from Tom Farkas, representing some 25 people in the Jeremy Ranch area, Jill Story with a group of some 24 people on Sunridge Drive, that's adjacent to the Woodward Park, and then Scott Nichols, who is also in the Sunridge Drive group. So can the appeals be consolidated, or does each one need to be heard separately?
Well, they'll be heard separately as far as agenda item is, or heard in at the same time as far as the agenda is concerned. They each kind of bring different factors to the appeal. I think it's been organized that way. One thing I want to compliment the appellants for getting all their materials in time so that the public could review them as well as the council before the meeting today. But, you know, this is just this project has been watched closely by both supporters and those that oppose throughout the process. It wasn't surprising that an appeal would come for this one because it is a rather large change to the area.
Okay. And again, we've got Dave Thomas representing the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. And
so Margaret Olson will be representing the council.
Okay. How likely is it that the council makes a decision Wednesday?
Well, I don't think it's highly likely just because this is not put in as a public hearing item or a decision item. It's just a work session item or a consideration of approval. They could make a decision, but given the time constraints, I don't see that as being a big possibility.
Yeah, and wasn't the council scheduled to render a decision this week on the appeal of the Colby School?
Well, we haven't scheduled that one yet. This is a case where both schedules of attorneys and schedules of the councils have not meshed real well, so we're probably into March before we hear that again, as well as just making sure that the record is complete. We did have an issue with materials coming in very late before the hearing the last time, so the record was a little confusing going into that hearing. So we're trying to clear that up before we and make sure that everybody gets a fair shake at seeing all those materials beforehand, especially both sides of that issue.
Okay. And then also possible approval of a proclamation declaring February as National Donor Day. And this is in honor of the woman who provided the liver for Assistant County Manager Anita Lewis?
That's correct. And I understand that the family will be attending the hearing that day. To provide some input to the council on this great resolution. And, you know, Anita's doing so well, and we're so happy to have her back and doing well and productive for the county again, if that's the measure. But, you know, this is a wonderful thing that we can do during Donor Month, for the National Donor Month.
Yeah. Now, you're looking for a new assistant county manager. Is Anita leaving?
A new deputy county manager? No. Anita is going to, her new title is going to be assistant manager for rural affairs. And what she's going to be concentrating on is really our outreach, our transparency, our ability to really be sensitive to rural issues in our county. Obviously, we've looked at our process on Chapter 3 in our East Side Zoning Code this year, as well as some other issues around. We see issues around grading permits, and we see issues around. We're seeing an issue now with road standards in relation to Garf Ranches, for instance. And so, you know, these things are very particular and particular sometimes to the east side of the county, but more rural type issues. And we need somebody that's concentrating on that. She's a perfect fit growing up in Colville. Or in the Colville area, as well as working for the county for the past 28 years and being very familiar with those things.
So is that a newly created position?
No, it's not a new position. Well, the job title and the job description is new. There are no new FTEs related to either of these. It's just kind of a reshuffling of FTEs within the administration of the county.
And when do you expect to hire a new deputy county manager?
So the job closes as far as recruitment on Friday of this week. And then I'll be reviewing applications with our personnel department for a week or so. And then we'll start looking at scheduling interviews. So I would say hiring somewhere in the mid to late March timeframe, and depending on who that is and how long they can would take to come on the job, we'll schedule it that way.
Yeah, how many applicants have you gotten?
We've gotten quite a few applicants, the way that it's been described to me is that we have some that are in the top tier and some that maybe just threw their hat in the ring. So, but what I'm expecting also is some really good internal candidates, and you know we always look to recruit within. Either within our county or within our county government. And we will have some good applicants from the internal, and I want to make sure that each of those get credence. But I'm also expecting that there'll be interest from the outside. I mean, Summit County is becoming a pretty exciting place lately.
Chemist Services Building, where are we at? We had a deadline for temporary occupancy February 8th.
Yeah, I believe they've met that. The update, they have their project meeting today, so I should get an update on that. I actually walked through the building Friday afternoon, and they're really close. I believe they're going to meet their date of substantial completion, and that's, again, that's a technical term in the contract. What people will see external to the building is that the siding isn't done. But that does not affect substantial completion. So we're going to continue working on it very hard. And at the same time, we've put the pieces in place. If the contractor does not meet substantial completion by this Friday, we can start collecting damages.
So do we have the library back in?
Library has moved in. Mm-hmm. And all the electronics are working. The health department's moved in. I think people are going to be very pleased once we do get in it. We haven't moved the senior center into it yet. I think that's going to be our last move.
Yeah, but there is temporary occupancy already.
There is. That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
I have nothing else today, Leslie.
All right. Well, the Park City Planning Commission meets tomorrow night starting at 5:30 in the City Council Chambers in the studio with a rundown. Planning Director Bruce Erickson, good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with affordable housing. Rhoda Stauffer, staff member with affordable housing, has prepared a draft housing plan for review and adoption by the City Council on Thursday. This is information only for the Planning Commission. Just an opportunity, what, for Planning Commissioners to ask questions?
Or? Yeah, I think it's important for the Planning Commission to understand what the program going forward is. This is a state-required mandate that we update our housing plan every 5 years. Planning department is looking at incorporating this particular housing plan into our general plan. It's really brilliant stuff, explaining how we're going to achieve our housing goals, explaining how we deal with our affordability questions, what average median income is we're approaching, whether we deal with purchase units versus rental units. It's really a very good document. It's worthy of reading when you're not watching the Olympics. But it's just important the Planning Commission know that this is out there and we're not just focused on current projects.
So what are the city's housing goals?
Well, you know, we have to deliver the 800 units by 2023, I believe, and we need to deliver 200 units in the next 5 years. We are in the process of delivering a bunch of units. The Homestake lot is going to deliver 50 to 60 units fairly quickly. Woodside Park Phase 2 is going to deliver 50 to 60 units. And the really interesting thing about these units are that they're a mix of housing types. And we actually have, going into Woodside Park Phase 1, a hybrid model of housing where you could buy your unit and actually have an accessory apartment attached to it that if you rent out to somebody else, that actually subsidizes your rent. And Anne Laurent, Community Development Director, and Rhoda Stauffer and Jason Glidden have figured out that this model is appropriate in a couple other locations in the country, and we're going to test it out here. So housing is going through all these beta tests to make sure that we're on the front lines of delivering what we ask for.
So the highlights mention a need for affordable rentals, but in the five-year goal section, really no mention of building or buying buildings to rent. These are all to own?
The first round is mainly ownership because that allows us to return the capital money of a purchase back to the rental pool. We're looking at buying some of the units in town that we can use for rental. The difficulty is the municipality does not want to be in the rental business. We're really good at land use planning. We're not very good at property management. So we want to figure out how to make sure these units stay in the rental pool, but the municipality does not want to be the rental agent for them.
Yeah, doesn't Mountainlands Community Housing do that?
Mountainlands does it, and they do very well. Scott Loomis and his team do an excellent job at that. But they're a nonprofit. They're not a government agency, and so they're allowed to do things slightly differently than what we are required to do.
Yeah. So is the plan to build all new?
We're looking at a bunch of infill operations. If we find opportunities to acquire, like Central Park condos, which is the 11 units we're acquiring now, we will do that. I'm going to defer the rest of the questions over to Ann and Rhoda and Jason because they're much more involved in the housing plan than I am.
Yeah, but that's new. I guess that's my point is that, I mean, like what we saw with Deer Valley, you know, they just bought one of the entire Prospector
exactly.
condos.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and
buildings.
So did Talisker. Mm-hmm. And Deer Valley built a bunch of units as well, and they're practically invisible in our community and actually are a brilliant role model for how we want to do things. And the units I'm thinking about are up Daly Canyon on Empire Avenue. They're called the Washington Mills site. They're really good. They take good care of them. They fit into the neighborhood. Brilliant infill.
Planning Commission will also take a vote on a resolution supporting the Treasure, that Treasure Hill be continued to a date uncertain. I guess that's just the legal part, so the Planning Commission could take up the conditional use application if the bond should fail?
That's exactly right. If things go sideways in November, then we're going to be right back to version 17.2, and Planner Astorga and the rest of the team have all the boxes piled up, and we're perfectly prepared to open up the boxes if we need to. Planning Commission will go to a date uncertain, and they will hopefully adopt this resolution in support of the current action.
The resolution also supports the mayor and city council purchasing the property, and I guess I just thought that city representatives had to stay out of the way of being partial when it came to bond election. So why does this need to be included in the resolution?
Well, we do, but at the point where the city council decides to go with the bond election, which is going to be sometime in July after the public notices and what the bond means, then we have to be impartial. Between now and then, our job is to make sure that we can commit to the public that this is what they're going to get to decide coming up in November. So our hard date is going to be when the city council votes to go ahead with the bond issuance in July or August.
The timeline for Treasure says that council will make a decision one way or the other at the February 15th meeting. Is there any circumstance that would not happen?
Oh, sure. A couple things could happen. There could be some recalcitrance on the part of the owners. We could have a bunch of public input that suggests this is not a good idea. That's not likely, but it certainly can because this is a public process and these are elected officials.
Yeah. So at this point, I mean, there's not really a lot left for the Planning Commission. They're just kind of on hold until we find out what happens November.
Well, the Planning Commission has a role in all of this, and that is the last 18 months and the 15 conditions of approval have a number of conditions of approval. And one of the things we're looking at is how many of the mitigations that were difficult to reach during our negotiations are going to go away because of this acquisition. And that's virtually impossible to quantify. You know, is this worth $100 million? Is this worth $50 million? Is this worth whatever? But if you remember the Planning Commission input and all the public input, there were a number of conditions in the conditional use permit that were virtually impossible to mitigate. And so the acquisition reduces those potential costs of mitigation and reduces the impacts on the neighborhood.
So will you staff continue to spend time looking at version 17.2 in the next 6 months?
We will not, unless directed by the city council. We're pretty far down the road. We were prepared to take the action the Planning Commission wanted us to take. So I think over the course of the next 6 or 7 months, we're going to make sure that our files are accurate. And when I die and go away, somebody else is going to be able to resurrect what we did here.
Yeah. And then in terms of what the landowners doing, they're just waiting for November as well, or do they?
Well, they are, except that this is a very complicated negotiation, and the legal department and the mayor are involved in this on how all the agreements go forward. We need to really be careful to recognize the negotiations between Park City Mountain and us and the landowner on the town lift, on the ski runs, on all the access and construction easements to the properties that were previously constructed. All those things are in the background, and making sure that we go forward. The planning department is not willing at this point to do anything to negatively affect the resort's opportunities to realign the town lift if they choose to. If they choose to go to a gondola or whatever solution they do 10 years down the road, we're not going to get in the way of that.
So when does the $6 million get paid to the property owners?
The $6 million goes hard as soon as the city council adopts their information on the 15th.
Okay. So, again, that's non-refundable.
Non-refundable, but we get a 10% non-negotiable reduction in total density on the site as well. So out of the 200 and some units, we'll get 20 or 30 units reduced that'll go away for the 6 mil.
Okay. Anything else, Bruce, you want to mention?
No, thank you. There's a couple other things coming up, but they're pretty minor on the agenda, and we'll be bringing forward some additional land management code changes in the next month or so.
Okay. back to business here with just everything else besides treasure, huh?
That's correct. Thank you, Leslie.
Okay. Bruce Erickson is Planning Director for Park City Municipal. 8:42 now. Good morning. Well, beating the skin cancer odds is this month's topic at tomorrow's free Lunch and Learn at the PC Mark. On the phone with me is the presenter, Dr. Kelly Stankiewicz. Good morning to you, Kelly.
Hi. How are you?
Good, good. So skin cancer, is that overall, or I mean, or is it different than melanoma? Talk to us a little bit about the differences.
Yeah, so there are three main types of skin cancer. We have basal cell carcinoma, squamous cell carcinoma, and melanoma. Basal cell carcinoma and squamous cell carcinoma are far more common than melanoma skin cancer. And thankfully so, because they're less worrisome. They don't cause usually a shortened lifespan or whereas melanoma can lead to shortened lifespan.
And why is melanoma worse?
Melanoma is worse because it can spread through the body. So usually basal cell carcinoma and squamous cell carcinoma stay in the skin. And when it stays in the skin, it's easy to treat because the skin is accessible and it's right there for us to remove. But when melanoma travels into the body through the lymph nodes and into the organs, it becomes much more difficult to treat. And Utah has a very high rate or high incidence of melanoma, at least twice as much as the rest of the U.S. population. So it's a big problem in Utah.
Yeah, and why is that?
You know, I would just be speculating, but, you know, the risk factors for melanoma are UV exposure. So at high altitude, we get more UV radiation. There's also a lot of, you know, fair-skinned people doing lots of outdoor activities in Utah. So that definitely contributes to the problem. And melanoma is a genetic, you know, issue. So that can lead to it as well. Yeah. And then, you know, down in southern Utah, there is a question if potentially the issue of the downwinder phenomenon is leading to more melanoma incidents in people today.
So in terms of causes of skin cancer, is sun the number one cause?
By far. So 90% of all skin cancers, basal cell carcinoma, squamous cell carcinoma, and melanoma, can be attributed to high, you know, heavy exposure to the sunlight.
So what about the argument that the ingredients in sunscreen can also cause cancer?
Well, so before we had broad-spectrum sunscreens, we had sunscreens that protected us from sunburn, so just the UVB rays. And there were definitely studies that showed that people who used more sunscreen to block sunburn stayed out in you know, at the beach longer and got more UVA radiation that led to more melanoma. Nowadays, we have sunscreen that's broad spectrum protecting against UVB and UVA, and so that is not a concern. There is, you know, there are some ingredients in sunscreens here in the U.S. that are banned in other countries and for various reasons. So the ingredient that you're talking about is retinol palmitate. It's, you know, a preservative that's used in sunscreen, and I think the evidence just isn't strong enough to suggest that.
And in terms of being checked for skin cancer, is that something just your regular physician can do?
Well, you know, I think that the primary care physician are a great first line for screening for skin cancer. But when someone is a high risk, which, you know, anybody in Utah, living in Utah, and especially anybody over the age of 50 living in Utah, I think would be categorized as higher risk. And in that case, dermatologists are, you know, the best place to get your skin checked. And particularly board certified, you know, making sure that your specialist is a board certified dermatologist, someone who's had specific training in looking at the skin, just like you wouldn't have your internist do your bypass surgery. You want to make sure that you have a specialist looking at your skin if you're high risk.
Sure. And how often should that be done? I mean, you know, women are expected to have mammograms every year or two. I mean, is that how often we should have our skin checked?
There's no There's no formal recommendation, but if you have a family history of skin cancer and you've had a lot of UV exposure, once a year for sure. If you have a history of pre-skin cancers yourself or skin cancers yourself, then, you know, it depends on how many you've had, but anywhere from every 3 months to once a year.
Okay. Again, you'll have lots more information tomorrow. You'll be at the PC Mark starting at noon. People can come hear your presentation and then I'm sure ask their own questions as well.
Yeah, I'm excited to teach people, you know, what to look for in their own skin, because that's another really important, you know, aspect of staying safe from skin cancer is being aware of your own skin and doing your own self skin exams.
Okay. Dr. Stankiewicz, thanks for your time this morning. Well, American pop culture icon Chubby Checker returning to the Egyptian Theater for a four-night run. He joins me now on the phone. Good morning.
So are you talking about skin cancer when they're flying down those hills in the snow?
Yeah. It's dangerous out here, they say, with the altitude.
Oh, I'm telling you, I'm excited to be in Utah once again.
Okay, well, it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights at the Egyptian. It was 1960 when you had your hit, The Twist. Actually, it was a cover song. I didn't realize this, of Hank Ballard. I never knew that. So what came first, the song or the dance?
No, actually, the song came. Hank Ballard wrote this song, and he recorded it, and it didn't make a lot of noise. And Dick Clark thought that if Chubby Checker sang this song, that it might be, he might could do something with it. He was very right about that. I think Hank Ballard was born and wrote that song for me, because I own that song. And it became the biggest song of the 60s decade. And that was a very exciting decade with many stars, including Woodstock and a host of other singers. The number one song of that decade, and it's the only song to be number one twice. In 1960, again in 1961, 62, around that time, it was number one. Same song all over again. And then we know what platinum is, but The Twist is the first platinum ever given to anyone. And at that time, in 1960, we had five albums on the charts, and they were all in the top 12 at one time. No one's ever done that.
Wow.
And the song later became... From 1958 to 2008, it became the number one song of all time, the first number one song. 2012, it became the number one song again. 2015 became the number one song again. Every 50 years this event takes place, The Twist will be number one until 2065.
Wow. Well, so you have been been known as the King of the Twist. Tell us about how the dance came to be.
Well, you know, the kids in the inner city, as they always do, made up a dance to this song. And when they stopped playing the song by Hank Ballard, and no one was going to see the dance that the kids had put together, no one was going to hear the song anymore. And there was a window of opportunity, and Chubby Checker saw that. And we campaigned that song while I was still in high school. We campaigned that song, and it caught on. A man in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, his name was Porky Chadwick. And we were playing, because The Twist is the B-side of that song, of that record. And Porky Chadwick says, I'm going to turn it over, and I'm going to play The Twist. And the minute he did that, the phone started ringing, and I had a better purpose in promoting this song, because now he turned it over, and then everyone started to play this song. And then me showing people what the dance was, all of a sudden, it became the real thing. In fact, one side of the song was called The Toot, and the other side was called The Twist. And we're the only people that have nine-sided double hit songs. No one's ever done that. But that's how The Twist came around. And not only that, The Twist gave us aerobic exercises, because someone thought that The Twist was great to exercise too, and that business was established. But The Twist itself gave us a style that never left us. The girl stood in front of the guy, and they both did something. They were exploding their sexuality while being fully dressed. That style has never left the floor. They do it today. The very moment that that style came on the floor with a twist, every other style, every other dance that came along after that, 24/7 until this moment that we're talking, they're still doing that style on the dance floor. Before the twist, it wasn't here.
Well, again, you'll be at the Egyptian Thursday night, Friday, and Saturday at 8 p.m., Sunday at 6. Tickets start at $39, and people can go to parkcityshows.com to buy them. Hey, Chubby, look forward to your return to Park City. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you so much. Looking forward to be there.
Okay. February is Children's Dental Health Month, and the People's Health Clinic is offering a free Children's Dental Health Clinic later this month. In the studio with details, I have the director of the health clinic, Beth Armstrong, along with development director, Amy Armour. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So how big of an issue is dental care, or I guess maybe the lack of it in Park City? Amy, you want to take that on? Or?
Sure, absolutely. There are a lot of people here. Well, first of all, as you know, People's Health Clinic, we provide health care for individuals who do not have health insurance in Summit and Wasatch County. And there are quite a few families that, if you don't have health insurance, you can't go to a dentist and get regular checkups and teeth cleanings. So we wanted to make sure that we provide that for our families here.
Okay. So what's happening with the clinic itself?
Oh, well, our clinic day, which is on February 20th, we, from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., we are providing free dental checkups and teeth cleanings. Actually, we're doing supervised brushing because education is such a big part of dental health. We want to make sure we arm our children with the right ways to brush their teeth. And to be seen, you just have to call our clinic and make an appointment.
Okay. How many dentists are you going to have available?
We have two dentists who are going to – well, actually, we've got a number of dentists who are going to be there all day long.
Right. We have – yes, we have a total of five providers throughout the day that will be coming in. Marielle Parceau, who obviously you know through Teeth First, and she's in the school district, she actually volunteers at the clinic weekly doing the supervised teeth brushing for the kids. And that's such a limited number that she can personally see on her own. So last year we decided that we should do a day dedicated to bringing the issue to the forefront and also getting as many kids in at one time that we could. And so last year we did 24. This year we're hoping to do 26 visits in the day. If anyone needs any additional care, meaning extractions or fillings or anything above and beyond what we'll be able to do, we're going to go ahead and get them in with the assistance of the Vail Epic Promise and the Assistance League and several other nonprofits in town are assisting us in paying for additional services for these kids.
And the thing about dental care is that, you know, when people don't have the insurance or the means, they just let it be and then things just
get worse.
Yeah, yeah. We see many children at the clinic who've never. And think of yourself and your own children and how we make sure that every 6 months they go and they have their checkups and they get to go to the orthodontist and they have so many wonderful things made available to them. These children have never seen a dentist, and this is the last thing in the order of priority for some of these families, because they sometimes you have to make a decision between buying groceries or going to a doctor, and so this ends up being the one thing that they continue to put off. And we believe at the clinic that oral health is tantamount
representative, right,
you know, of overall health.
Yeah, sure is. And then, of course, we have just bad practices, you know, either brushing your teeth wrong or, you know, keeping a baby bottle, you know,
right,
propped up when it shouldn't be in their mouth like that.
Right. And sugary drinks. A lot of people, myself included, didn't know until I learned last year what it means that it's not just, you know, brushing your teeth. It's also what you're eating and what you're drinking and how much of that you're eating and drinking.
Okay. So what do they call? What number do they call to get that appointment?
435-333-1850. Yep. And that's our general clinic number.
Okay. And you do this once a year or twice a year?
Once a year, but we do have, as part of the services at People's Health Clinic, we have dental care. So anybody can call and make an appointment.
Okay. And real quick, Beth, some exciting news. You had the grand opening of your Wasatch Clinic.
We did. We had the ribbon cutting yesterday for our People's Health Clinic in Heber at the Heber Hospital, where we'll do one day a week on Mondays 9 to 12. We'll have women's services. So if you're in Wasatch County and you're uninsured, then you should give the same number. And by the way, you make all the appointments through our 333-1850 number, and we'll get you in to see us in Heber.
Okay. I'm guessing that could be a big demand there, yeah?
Yeah, it should be. Yeah, we're more than a third of our patients come from that area.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, ladies, thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much.